Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 338 of the Roguecast, recorded June 29th, 2021. Fifth week werewolf versus sixth week gremlin.
All right, we're back with a fifth week recording.
Right, fifth week, for people who don't know, is just one of those months that is long enough to contain a fifth week of comics. And it's usually, that week is kind of like the oddball week, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit weird. There's like, although there are quite a few new things launching, and Image had a notably big week of like three books coming back for new story arcs, so
yep.
It's not a small week.
Although it just means DC, that there's a little quirkiness to
it. A little bit of
quirkiness. And they also usually don't have the major releases hitting that week.
Yeah. You know how full moons, like people say full weird stuff happens under a full moon?
Yeah.
Same thing with the fifth week.
Yeah. I also become a hairy man.
It's true.
Not a werewolf, just a hairy man.
Yeah.
You're a fifth week werewolf?
People are like, Dave, your arms look a little shaggier, and I'm like, I know. Fifth week? Yeah. You know how it is. You know how it is.
I read there should be a 6 week somehow. And then,
There are six week Draculas. 5th week werewolf versus 6 week Dracula. Anyway, I didn't grab a lot of store news.
We should mention the dice.
Yes. Oh, yeah, you're right. We should.
Yeah, the dice are a big thing. So we've been having good success with it. Like, in addition to carrying a zillion regular dice,
yep.
We've been carrying these metal dice for a while now. And we started with, like, three or four of them.
I like to call them fancy dice.
We have fancy gifty dice, yeah.
Yep.
We started with, like, three or four, and then we're like, next thing you know, we've got, like, 20 in the case, and they're doing super well. People really like them.
Then so, Randy was like, we should have 100.
What if we had 100? Randy queried.
So what happened was, we ordered from this place called Old School Dice, and theirs come in, like, a neat little metal tin, and they have different styles.
They
have, like, the Halfling Forge, and the Dragon Forge, and the Dwarven Forge, and the knights.
Different styles to them. They're not just flat metal ones, but they have some ornamentation or cool borders
or ones have scales.
Cool letter.
There's like five or six in each style, or maybe 10 in each style.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, what if we ordered one of each?
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And then Dave and Nick got to lug them all in.
Yep. Somehow it came in when Randy was not here.
Hey, I had already worked a full day that next Thursday because there was all kinds of other stuff that came in because I ordered that. This isn't the argument I think it was.
We're watching you, Lander.
Just noticed you're ordering a lot.
Yeah. And we did get some. So there's the long story short. There's a ton of cool metal dice.
Yeah. Yep, they are.
To take a look at. We even got one.
They're in
all
both
sixes.
What would you say? Oh, all sixes.
Yeah, all yep. D6.
And what I was going to say is they are both have filled up the case that we had, but they are also in the spillover empty areas where once we had like Pokemon cards and stuff, but they've just been so hard to get for months and months and months now that we're using that space to hold some of the dice. So we have lots of nicely displayed dice. Right, come check them out. Get some gifts.
One of our 10 listeners needs new dice.
Get them as a gift for your DM.
Saying,
get them as a gift for yourself.
Things are opening up. If you're vaccinated, you can play D&D again a little bit.
That's true.
Right.
I think now is the time to
walk in like a boss. Is that what you're saying?
Walk in like a boss and have dice that fit your character that are fancy.
Yeah.
By the way, also, I did get one thing, that magnetic dice case.
Oh, yeah, that
is. It's like a nice wooden case. So the lid becomes a dice tray, which you kind of need if you're going to have metal dice.
And it had, like, an individual slot for the different dice. So it's almost like a cool dice holster thing, or, like, if you're, like, in the El Mariachi Desperado movies, like, how you would have your guns in the guitar case, but your guns in this are your dice.
And it's got a little magnetic latch, so you put it together. It's a really nice little case.
We also did get leather dice trays as well.
Oh, yeah, those leather dice that roll up like a scroll.
Yep. Yeah, they look like something that, like, you know, a D&D adventurer would actually have on their pack of stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's what Conan had in his pack.
Yeah, he's like, let's play some role-playing games.
Well, we also did get a restock on our squeezable little mimics and...
Oh, yeah, the RPG squeeze.
Yeah, so if you're like, what are they even talking about? It's like a little stress ball thing, but it's like, you know, like little, almost like that, somewhere between that and like a little plush version of D&D characters. These ones, are they specifically the beholders?
It's a mimic, a beholder, and a
gelatinous cube.
And you get one random. They're random colors. We also did get plushes that they do.
Yeah.
We'll get a plush of a gelatinous cube and a plush of a rust monster called Rusty.
Rusty the Rust Monster and Carla the Gelatinous Cube.
Yes. They're adorable. If you have kids, these seems like a good thing.
They're
to
really good size.
Yeah, and also good for, like, you know, just hopping a desk or something with. People have been buying them for all kinds of different things. Part of it is I think we had those little prototypes out that they could just give a little test squeeze to.
Yeah.
And once they try that and they're like, oh, these are pretty cool.
Yep. Also, we haven't unpacked them just yet, but we have new maps. They're basically, there's a big hardcover book of maps you can lay open and put the maps in there. And there's also these what they call Infinidungeon scrolls. So, like, it's a scrolling map that you keep pulling out and there's more map on it.
Oh.
And it's got, like, color form stickers that you can put on it, to, like, put to a terrain and that kind of stuff. So...
I know that people may not know what color form is, but look it up. They were the neat, the coolest, some of the coolest toys of like the 70s and 80s.
Yes.
Maybe even the 60s. I don't know how far back they
go. I don't either. Caveman times, I'm pretty sure.
But it was like stickers that you could pick up and move around, and so you'd have like a cool little playset and you could move things around and your heroes. I had superhero ones, Randy. What did you have?
I think I also had superhero ones.
Yeah, they were the coolest. Yeah.
And Shrinky Dinks.
Quick aside, the back of them was just a flat color, right? The front was the thing, the back was a flat color. My brother, always very creative, would flip them around and be like, it's Spider-Man from the negative dimension. He's a bad guy. And like he would twist up the story like that. And I would be like, neat.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's committed now.
Anyway, David doesn't have a brother. just want to mention again, Magic Frontier Realms pre-release. If you are playing Magic, you know everybody's playing Magic. That is coming up here in a couple of weeks on July 16th.
We're filling up.
We are filling up.
Last I knew, we were at like 20-something of our 36 slots.
In theory, we have 36 people.
So. Get on board now.
Yeah.
And beat Randy and Anna.
Oh, yeah. That's the big thing.
And Free Comic Book Day is coming. We should be getting... That's the end of our middle August.
Yep. Some good books amongst the...
Yeah, and DC is participating as well, even though they're not with Diamond, so...
I don't know.
We just ordered their stuff.
We did.
I forget what all it was. Nick, there's like three of them. There's a Teen Titans Raven...
Right. Celebrating the new...
There's a new Batman that's going to tease the
John
new...
John Ridley one?
The new... the James Tynion one.
Oh, is it James Tynion?
But it's teasing
okay.
his new story that's like the... Is it the Scarecrow, maybe? But there is a new... There's a new story he's doing.
Okay.
The Masters of Fear or something like that. It's like his big epic that he's going to do. And then I forget what the other one was, but it's a notable promotional thing. So,
Nick, what were you saying about the Raven one? It's tied into something?
It's the... You know how they did a Beast Boy one and a Raven...
The all-ages ones?
Oh,
the kind of teen plus ones?
Right, yes, yes. They were like YA graphic novels that kind of... for those of you who haven't
seen
them...
So now they've reached the crossover point.
Okay. So there's comics...
No, it's a graphic novel. It's a third.
This is like probably the first chapter of it, or something.
I got it.
Yeah.
For people who haven't seen it, because they're not super highly publicized, this is like an ideal thing I think for teen readers, because what they do is they kind of take the big like things that we really like, but like the big shared superhero universe, and they kind of make it less about that and more about the focused character. So it'd be Catwoman kind of on her own, sometimes a little more realistic, but like very. Like, that kind of deep dive into characters you would get in a good YA novel.
Well, this specific one, the Beast Boy and the Raven ones, are hugely popular. We sell them every week.
Yeah.
And they've been... I mean, it's comparable to, like, Rand Talgemeier, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So this one, the Beast Boy Loves Raven, is the third one they're putting out. And this is going to be the Free Comic Book Day will have a chapter of it.
Very cool.
So, yeah.
Very cool.
All right, let's talk about news. Let's talk Halloween Kills trailer.
Right, this is the sequel to... Was the last one that was the kind of quasi-relaunch just called Halloween?
Yes, I believe it was.
Is it the fourth movie just called Halloween?
So technically
third?
This...
Well, Carpenter's...
The first one?
Rob Zombies.
And I thought there was another one. Am I wrong?
I don't think there was another one.
No, I don't think there is.
You would think they need to be like, the Halloween.
You gotta stop calling... Yeah, at least use the Fast and Furious naming convention. It should be called Hallows, All Hallows Eve... Ween and the Hallows that it, like, just break it all up.
I feel like this series like takes the first two movies, or maybe just the first.
Just
movie.
I think the first one,
that's right.
Because the second one actually did reveal that was the one that revealed that Michael Myers was the brother of Jamie Lee Curtis's character, and that's why he was obsessed about her. Anyway, and they killed him off in that, and that resolved it for at least a little while. But yes, the last Halloween that came out assumed that only the first movie took place. And that it's been
she's still his sister.
I don't know if they kept that.
Did they not?
They didn't.
They
didn't bring it up.
Oh,
I was thinking about
interesting.
It.
Interesting.
It is not a big thing.
I think he's just obsessed with her.
Correct.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
And she, Jamie Lee Curtis, is kind of like off the reservation, she's become sort of a recluse, but she's also a badass, sort of, like you said,
looks like Linda Hamilton. Terminator too, yeah.
I actually thought the newer one was good. I own it. I liked it quite a bit.
I liked it enough that I enjoyed seeing it, but I didn't like it enough to buy it myself.
I liked it in theory, and then I seen the trailer.
The director was David Gordon
Randy,
Green.
I think you and Ross should probably watch it. It's pretty good.
Maybe we'll at some point.
It's also, like, produced by, oh, crap, the Eastbound and Down guy. Why can't I think of his
Kenny
name?
Kenny Powers.
No, the other guy. The actual...
I don't know.
The producer?
McBride. Danny McBride.
That is Kenny Powers.
Oh, it is Kenny Powers. I never watched Eastbound and Down.
That's his name in the show. I can never remember his actual name, and I remember his fake.
I remember him from the This Is the End.
I remember Tropic Thunder.
So I have a question. Yes. You know, sort of what we see happen in this one, like, there's some neat stuff that picks up right after the ending of the previous movie.
Yeah.
Where, I guess it's...
She basically lures him into a trap, which is her house is basically a, like,
burning
a fire.
Down, and he's, like, trapped and, like, even, like, locked in the basement. Like, there's, like, it's sort of one of those no getting out sort of things.
And the trailer opens with the fire department going...
The rescue team going in and, like, yeah, knocking stuff aside to try and get to that sound in the basement or whatever.
Which is...
It's a gory trailer.
Yeah.
It's practically a Red Band trailer with lots of gore, lots of deaths. Now, it seems like she's doing a thing where she is trying to rally the town against him. Like, we're all gonna arm up and take him down. Now, here's my question to you. She was already Linda Hamilton'd up in the previous movie.
Yeah.
So the main new thing here is, because, you know, like, she had a shotgun and stuff in the previous one, is just that sort of rallying the people.
Yes.
Yeah. Her, like, it was her granddaughter's in on the action.
Well, it is, like, such a weird, like, in some ways so non-scary to, like, it's like going into the action movie side of things. But, like, they clearly show, like, you know, he's still moving around, stealthing around in the night, killing people
and
stuff.
Well, from what I understand, they're also utilizing some of, like, Michael Myers', like, the people that he's killed, like, people that are associated with them, sort of banding,
like, psychological warfare, you mean? Or?
No, like, teaming up with...
But wait, with people who've died?
No, the loved ones of the people who have died.
I gotcha.
It's the family members
who have been... It's a survivor's payback, sort of, or the families of survivors.
And I know Anthony Michael Hall is in this
families
somewhere. Was he in the Halloween franchise
never to my knowledge.
Point? Okay.
On the other hand, I think at one point, like, Busta Rhymes was in there or something, in, like, H2O or something.
I thought he showed up in, like, one of the later, like, Halloweens, as, like, reprising the kid role from number two.
The grown-up kid?
Those, I think so.
But those roles don't count.
Yeah, no, I was actually just having a laugh. Basically, every movie after the initial one and then the last one is out of continuity.
I mean, LL Cool J was in H2O.
In the trailer, she mentioned something about, like, she's like, Michael the person could be killed, but every time he kills, he's personification of evil. Like, I thought the idea of making him a little more supernatural is probably a good idea, because it starts to beg the question of, like, why on earth can't you just kill this one guy?
Sure. And they did get, actually, like, they straight up got supernatural at some point in the movies, because they had to have him resurrected.
Right.
Was it this, or was it a Friday the 13th where a, like, lightning strike resurrected him?
That was Friday the 13th. Yeah, lightning strike resurrected Jason.
Okay. How did he come back in... After his death in the second movie.
Submerged in Kool-Aid.
Oh.
Yeah. Like a Kool-Aid popsicle.
Anyway, I have a feeling I'll probably end up seeing this in the theater, because I know I've got some friends who are going to want to see it. I'm not, like, super enthusiastic, but I think it'll probably be fun.
Yeah.
I like the more low-key first one. I'm talking, like, 1978 or whatever it was.
Yep.
And you like the third one.
And I like the third one, which is just its own beast.
Yep.
So like, this is almost like it's gotten kind of too big and silly for me, but they're playing it straight, and I appreciate that.
Yeah. Very different project. Turner & Hooch trailer from Disney Plus.
Also, practically a Red Band trailer. So violent.
So, Dave, you've never seen Turner & Hooch.
Nope. I understand. Is this one where on the trailers I was led to watch a dog shake its jowls in slow motion?
Yes.
And Tom Hanks is like, don't slobber on that. That's my new whatever.
Yes.
And then he did slobber on it. And he's like, Hooch!
And he chewed some
or Turner,
shoes,
whichever one is...
That is correct.
And so, then they are like, well, I guess we should solve a crime. And they probably solve a crime.
So, yes. So, the original movie...
I might be downplaying.
Is Tom Hanks, and he's delightful. And he's basically... He's a cop in this small town where basically nothing ever happens.
Right.
It's very small town. Like, he's the one who, like, finds lost bikes and stuff like that.
Okay.
But then this old man who has this dog, Hooch, who, whenever he goes out to see him to complain about noise complaints or whatever, Hooch, like, grabs him by the neck and holds him there. Hooch, like, enjoys tormenting Scott Turner.
Is there a particular type of breed he is?
He's a big-ass dog.
He's a big dog, yes.
Particular breed, yes.
I'm mixing him up with Beethoven with the Charles Grodin movies.
It's similar vibe, though.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, the old man who owns Hooch gets murdered.
Yeah.
And Hooch is the witness of the murder.
Yep.
And Scott, who's not a dog person, he's like, he takes Hooch to the vet, and he's like, can I show him, like, a lineup or something? And the vet laughs at him, and she's like, yeah, he sees a dog. He's not going to see pictures. Like, if he sees the guy, he might bark at him. So Scott has to basically take the dog in and try to find whoever murdered this old man in this town.
Yep.
There's twists and turns. He eventually learns to love the dog and the veterinarian. In different ways, I should say.
That sounds like a solid little Tom Hanks vehicle.
It is,
like,
a different person playing the veterinarian.
Because
it was Mary Whittingham who played her originally.
So,
though I've never seen it, that sounds fun.
It's actually really good. Yeah. I really enjoy this movie. Also, it's Craig T. Nelson as his boss.
Craig T. Nelson is a good boss type character.
Yeah, he's good. It's got a little bit of darkness to it, actually. It's not just wacky. It's like
when Kindergarten Cop and stuff like that.
Yeah, kind of very, very similar to Kindergarten Cop, Beverly Hills Cop, all that kind of stuff.
What was it, PG, though, at the time?
I think it was PG.
It had to be PG.
I think it was PG, yeah.
Okay.
But the remake takes place in modern times. Scott's son, played by Josh Peck, he's also a detective in maybe a small town, it looks like. And has no time for family or romance or that kind of stuff. He's too busy with his job. But his father, who has passed away, because Tom Hanks was not available, bequeaths to him a new dog who he's named Hooch, who he says basically it's like the reincarnation of Hooch. which is kind of funny that he basically adopted this dog who's a lot like Hooch.
Yeah. Yep.
And now this cop has a Hooch of his own and a dog trainer who may be his romantic interest.
Yeah.
So they're not exactly shying away from just basically remaking the movie.
Quick question.
But I mean,
movie or TV show?
TV show. But at this point, the number of people who've actually seen Turner and Hooch is probably a little less than.
I think it's fair.
They're dying off by the droves.
Turner and Hooch murdered people, it turns out.
That's right, Tom. That's the real QAnon thing that they should have been on to. Tom Hanks and Hooch are out there killing.
It's mainly saying kids will enjoy this because it's a lovable dog doing fun things.
They will not be required to have seen the first one. No. But if it does, it will enhance their experience tenfold.
Then the parents could show them the first one. And then
here's the thing.
This is old.
Based on Disney Plus's track record so far, Big Shot is great.
Yep.
Mighty Ducks wonderful... Game Changers is really good, and it is similar to this. It was basically a new story that had some of the previous people in it, and I suspect they'll do the same thing here.
Yeah, Disney has a good mold, and I don't expect them to shy away from
this. This looks fun. I'm looking forward to it. Changing tone yet again, Junji Ito, the horror manga master who we all love, is doing a manga, maybe like a promotional manga for The Lighthouse.
Yeah, that is to say, the cult indie movie from, 2 years ago? Something like that?
Yeah.
That had Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson?
Yep.
Yes.
Right, super, super entertaining movie from the guy who made The Witch and stuff like that.
Yep. David Eggers.
Weird as hell.
Yeah.
Just bizarre. Did you see it, Nick?
I never did.
So I'm the only one here who's seen it, right? Okay. It's a weird movie. I don't know if y'all know this.
I did not like The Witch, so I have no intention of seeing this.
So I love The Witch. I need to see.
Also kind of didn't like The Witch, but I did like the experience. I just kind of felt like it was kind of like, once it was over, I was like,
I assume it's just Willem Dafoe, like, cackling in the dark about the lighthouse and the waters.
It is that, absolutely. It is both like a kind of very character-centric, it is like beautifully filmed, startling to watch, weird movie, dreamlike.
It's black and white, right?
At times very conversational. Not only is it black and white, but it's filmed on like a square format.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So like it was actually bothersome to me, I think, for about 10 minutes where I was just like, I felt like the movie couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
Almost, like, because it was so TV square, like an old-time TV. But then you kind of warm up to it, and, you know, it's so clear that his cinematography is very immaculate, and he knows what he's doing, and that almost in that same way that Wes Anderson is almost a little showy, you know, well, he's very showy about, like, his kind of controlled cinematography. But, long story short, it is being released, like, in Japan, and to coincide with that, as I understand it, Junji Ito, their horror master, takes this kind of psychological horror movie and has done like a at least some form of adaptation or light adaptation of it. It's not. It doesn't sound like he did a full adaptation.
Right.
But there's, I saw some preview artwork and it looks super cool. Like you can see his Junji Ito style drawn Willem Dafoe.
I hope that it will, like Frankenstein and some of his other stuff, will make its way into a Junji Ito hardcover collection at some point.
Yeah. It seems like the perfect thing to put together with kind of a some of his little odds and ends side projects or like illustrations from him or something like that.
It's interesting that I wonder if he'd like. Was asked to do it, or if he was like, I want to do this because I love this movie so much.
It certainly is up his alley, although it's, like, less, you know, like, I almost wouldn't call it horror, overall. Like, I feel like it's more of, like, psychological suspense and surrealism.
There's
in
no
a way.
Spirals.
No spirals. No, also
body
no...
Body deformity.
like, there's no biomechanical corpse sharks, or any of that stuff from Gyo. But anyway, if you're a fan of Junji Ito, type Junji Ito in Lighthouse and check out some preview art, and hopefully we'll get some print copy one day.
We have a pretty strong customer base for Junji Ito based on our orders.
It is crazy.
Yeah, it is
we,
crazy.
We, like, every single week sell 800 copies of various Junji Ito projects.
It is true. That might be a little bit of an exaggeration, but not by much.
And somebody was in the other day, and they had a very cool Junji Ito shirt on, by the way.
Yeah, nice. Everything else we're talking about this time is all weird stuff that's in development, but it's interesting. Simon Pegg is working on another iteration of the Galaxy Quest TV series. This has been a very troubled project. There, like, several people tried to make a... Amazon Prime was going to do it. Paul Scheer was one of the writers. It had been put on hold. Sigourney Weaver told people the project was in mothballs after Alan Rickman died. But apparently... Simon
Nothing
Pegg
has ever been released,
yeah.
Right?
There's rumors of, like, a story of, like, the older Galaxy Quest cast being brought into the series with a young cast sort of riff on the 2009 Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
There's some neat ideas. Tim Allen has discussed reprising his role. Sigourney Weaver is apparently interested. So we'll see what happens. Simon Pegg is a guy who I would trust to do it.
Yeah, he did a good job with his contribution, I think, to Star Trek Beyond. Mm-hmm. He, of course, has been in Star Trek movies.
Yes.
You know, he's literally, if they do that riff on, you know, younger replacement actors, he was the younger replacement actor.
Yeah,
and also, he's a geek guy. Like, he did Spaced.
Right.
And Shaun of the Dead. Like, he was someone
seems
I would
to be,
trust with it.
He's also a, kind of a geek guy with a heart.
Yeah.
He likes to do, like, he might do some snarky, dark humor at times, but he's always got kind of a beating heart in there, and that feels close enough to the Galaxy Quest ethos.
Yep.
So, here's hoping it comes off.
So, it also looks like, this is a Twitter post, so take this for what it's worth. Tom Welling says he and Michael Rosenbaum are developing a Smallville animated series, which will feature original characters. He says, we're working on bringing those characters back to life and use as many of the original cast members as possible. And he says, don't tell anyone, though. It's a secret. We're still working on it. And I'm like, as many of the cast members as possible. Well, I can think of one notable cast member who will not be in the animated series.
Is it Clark's mom?
It is not Clark's mom.
I was jokingly going to say Pete, but I think that guy
did get into legal trouble.
But not on the level of why can't I say her name?
It's Allison Mack.
Allison Mack, you know, the second in command of a creepy sex cult.
Yeah. So we would probably not see, which is unfortunate. Only in, I mean, for many reasons, but insofar for Smallville,
she's pretty integral.
She's one of the best characters.
She was,
yeah. But Lex was kind of the best character.
Yeah.
And I can see some fun stuff to be had. I you know, that show went plenty long, like 10 years or something like that.
Yeah.
So
wasn't
like
there enough?
I don't feel like there's necessarily more stories to be told that are we're still
I
in
know,
small.
That one fan who made that video with the finale who went insane.
What is that called? I believe it's called Smallville Emotions is what it's actually titled.
Yeah.
I need people to look this up. Go to YouTube and type in Smallville Emotions. I think that's the one. I don't know. I still go under the assumption that it was a spoof.
Staged, yeah.
But I saw enough stuff somewhere else that to think maybe not. It's a great 5 minutes though. Watch this guy's reactions to the last show.
here's the thing. I watched a season of Smallville.
Hmm?
I don't like this show.
Yep.
I don't want it to come back.
All right.
But it doesn't hurt me if it does.
Okay.
But I also don't think it's going to. Like, this is basically Tom Welling on Twitter being like, this is kind of like a Worf saying this, the Worf show that he's working on. I'm like, I don't know if this is actually happening.
Well, right. At some point, it looked like that was happening, and then it was like, oh, he's actually just doing some voiceover work for one of the video games.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So the, like, it was like hashtag Worf returns or whatever, yeah. And then people were like, what?
Yeah, it feels like mostly this is like sort of B or C list actors doing some promotion to get, for their career. Which, let me throw, I don't begrudge them.
Let me throw an idea out here.
Yeah.
Smallville fight game. It'd be just like Injustice. Everybody thinking, just lend voices, and it'll be a side view kind of beat 'em up.
I'm just saying, if we're gonna get an animated series, can we please get like the Terrier season 2 animated series?
That would be an.
Well,
honor.
Tom Welling wasn't in Terrier, so
I don't
no.
care.
All right, if you want Tom Welling and Michael Rosenbaum to play out Terriers, I guess
look,
that's what we're doing.
Am I getting a Terrier season 2?
Yeah.
All right, then maybe I will.
Isn't Tom Welling? Isn't he in Lucifer? Or wasn't he?
He might have been.
You know, I was sad to see that Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist got canceled.
Yes.
But if they could resurrect it as an animated series with Tom Welling and Michael Rosenbaum...
Sure, I'd watch it.
I'd probably be in.
Yeah. If this is the rule, if we're doing the Rosenbaum Welling law,
yeah.
They will resurrect anything as an animated series that you love, but it will star Michael Rosenbaum and Tom Welling.
That's right.
You know, Rosenbaum's a great voice actor. He did The Flash in Wrestling Unlimited.
He could develop a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I bet he can sing.
Yeah, sure.
Could he play Clarice? Because I know that got canceled recently,
right,
too.
Right, I don't want that back. But I do want to see what they were going to do with Clarice in Hannibal. So, Hannibal Season 4 animated series starring Michael Rosenbaum as Clarice.
Yep.
And Tom Welling as Hannibal. Sure,
yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, set in Smallville, by the way.
Yeah, set in Smallville. But you also have to have the original cast. So, like, they have to be, like, young Hannibal.
Yeah.
And an older Hannibal is played by Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Also, they have meteor freak powers.
The Galaxy Quest animated series?
Yep.
Michael Rosenbaum and Tom Welling?
That actually kind of works.
Yeah, Michael Rosenbaum can play the Alan Rickman part. Tom Welling can play the Tim Allen part.
Yep.
I'm good with that. And the Sigourney Weaver can be Sigourney Weaver.
Everything else is Muppets.
Except for Sam Rockwell.
Jansen Rockwell. All right, we should move on before this gets more out of control.
All right, so this is Supernatural. Also ended after, I think, a billion seasons.
I wonder what could be done with that as an animated series.
Jensen and his wife, Danielle Ackles, are working on a prequel called The Winchesters that will focus on the mom and dad and how they got together and all that. So there was always apparently only teased, that kind of thing. And the notion, I guess, is Jensen Ackles will be like the voiceover narrating it.
Wonder Year style.
Yeah.
So, did you see the scandal about this, though?
No.
No one told Jared Padalecki that this was happening.
Oopsie.
And he kind of went a little apeshit on Twitter about it. And
well, Jared Padalecki seems so even-keeled. He's never gotten a bar fight in Austin or anything.
Well, you know, he is Walker right now, and somehow
that
got renewed.
That show is
terrible. It's really bad.
That show's going to run for like 5 or 6 seasons,
probably so.
But also, The Winchesters is an animated series with Michael Rosenbaum and Tom Welling.
Sure. I don't think this sounds like a bad idea.
No, it's fine.
It's Robbie Thompson who's going to be developing it. So I feel like this is going to have some quality.
How long did Supernatural run?
15
seasons.
I know it was a big one.
Yeah.
I, of course, think that, like, that's probably about 10 seasons too long, but...
It felt it. I will say, every once in a while, there were several episodes that were quite awesome.
Right, they would still hit some good...
But
some really good
for the most part, there was a lot of filler.
But yeah, conceptually, it's not a bad idea.
I'm sure Mandy is going to kill me for saying that.
let me quick ask. In the continuity as we knew it, I kind of got the impression that the dad was involved in the stuff, but the mom wasn't.
I don't know.
Nope.
Okay.
She was the hunter, and he was not originally.
Was that revealed later on?
Okay.
Cool. I just knew that, like, what, did she die in some kind of horrific way? Yeah, she was like, that was
in the first episode.
Okay, but that's cool. Like, I wasn't sure if they were going to have to retcon it in.
No. It was in the story.
Yep, that sounds all right.
Interesting. All right, that is news for the week. Let's take a second, and then we'll come back and talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, June 30th.
Yep.
Wow, fifth week. there's a, like we alluded to earlier, there's a bunch of sort of unusual stuff. DC has the Green Arrow 80th anniversary. They've been doing these. They did one for Joker, they did one for Robin, they did one for Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
It is basically a big 100-page super spectacular. It's got
pretty much everyone involved who's ever written Green Arrow.
It's got a dozen stories.
And they're sort of homages to the different aspects and different eras of the characters.
Yep.
So there's the Silver Age one where it's running around with Speedy and like kind of the Batmobile or Batman knockoff stuff like the Arrow Cave and stuff. And then there's also like the so obviously that you're going to have the Hard Traveling Heroes era, the Mike Grell Longbow Hunters era, the Kevin Smith Resurrection era, and then all the like the modern stuff, you know, New 52 and Rebirth.
So there's Tom Taylor and Nicola Scott notably do a really fun little Green Arrow Wildcat story that's fantastic.
Yeah.
There's a sort of weird Silver Age-y one from Mariko Tamaki and Javier Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. Mike Grell returns to do a sort of a coda to his run. And Phil Hester returns to do sort of a coda to his run with Kevin Smith. Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino, who did their run, they do what they call the last Green Arrow story. And there's a piece at the back that's by Larry O'Neill, Denny O'Neill's son, that is a sort of silent issue about his father, who was one of the notable, Denny O'Neill was one of the notable Green Arrow writers.
It's really good.
So yeah, a lot of fun stuff in here. If you're a Green Arrow fan, I would definitely recommend picking it up. It's got some great art throughout.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy to me that of all of these, like, there's great art throughout, but like seeing Mike Grell kind of really very, very notably recreate his Longbow Hunters style and like a little hit for his vignette was really cool.
Yeah.
There's also a recipe for Ollie's chili.
Yes. Oh, I missed that. That's nice. Great. It's a nice touch.
Also, there's been multiple versions of that chili, I bet.
Or I'm
sure. Always the same recipe.
I don't know.
I know it's been around, but I don't know if it's the same one.
Yeah. And then there's great covers. They did the cover per decade, so there's a bunch of great covers on it, too. Marvel launches a miniseries called The United States of Captain America. This is by Christopher Cantwell and Dale Eaglesham on art, who did the sort of super, what's the commander Captain America? What was it, Brubaker called? Super Soldier?
Oh, yeah.
Whatever he was. So he's wearing that costume, which is interesting. But basically, it's Sam and Steve, and they discover that there's this young, queer Captain America of the rails, and they discover that maybe there's a network of people around the country who are basically taking up the mantle of Captain America and trying to be the ideals of Captain America throughout America.
Yeah, and by the rails you mean he's like literally like a runaway who is like train hopping and stuff like and is kind of like protecting other runaways. It was a cool idea.
Yeah,
I kind of dig it.
It's a neat idea. I do feel like Cantwell's take on Cap and Falcon both feel a little bit off. They don't quite feel right.
Yeah, there's one or two places where Cap sounded a little bit like, almost like the old stereotype of Cap, where he's like a little bit, kind of more of a hard ass, like almost a military man, and I was like, that's a little odd.
Yeah. But, it's a lot of fun, and I like the idea, and then the backup story introduces this new Cap, whose name I don't remember now. Aaron Fisher, the Captain America of the Railways. So, we'll be getting some more of those. Street Fighter has a sci-fi and fantasy pinup special, which is basically one of their swimsuit special, but it's all sci-fi and fantasy flavored versions of the Street Fighter characters.
Yep.
There's some fun pinups in there. If you like this kind of thing, this might be the kind of thing you like.
Yes.
Cullen Bunn has a new book, Parasomnia. Did you guys read this?
Yeah, I read it.
What'd you think?
I enjoyed it. I mean, I have a soft spot for Cullen Bunn. He comes up with so many dang ideas, and he puts them out there. This one is an interesting one, sort of blending real world and then a fantasy world that are sort of in conjunction with one another, about a man sort of looking for, I think it's his son?
Yeah.
It's an interesting concept because he's kind of a silent person who's a homeless man in the real world, but in the fantasy world he's kind of a badass vigilante.
Zorro-esque type people. Yeah.
Yeah.
The art by is it Andrea Muti?
Yeah, it's Andrea Muti.
Really nice.
It is.
Yeah, sort of painty looking.
I think if you're a fan of Cullen Bunn, it's definitely worth checking out.
Vault has a book called Barbaric.
This is my pick for the week.
This, me too. I love this book.
I thought it was going to. It started out being kind of silly, and I was like, I don't know. But then I kind of bought into the silliness and kind of the fun concepts, and I loved this.
So the basic pitch on this is. It's a Conan-type guy who has been cursed
to only be able to do good.
Correct.
And he has an axe that is like that drinks blood, but it will only let him do good.
I feel like good is in quotation marks. Well, he's got to go murder people.
He's got to murder bad people.
And bad people is kind of on a scale.
Yeah, yeah.
But he can't just go around and be a debauched reaver.
Correct.
No, he has to be a good guy. It's a lot of fun. The art is really nice.
You know what the art reminded me of, Randy? Like, it looked like some of the kind of A-list guys that Mark Miller's been pulling in on his projects over the last few years.
Yeah, I can see that.
It is really top-notch.
Like Sean Murphy type guys.
So this issue has a little bit of, you know, it's definitely like kind of darkly comic at times. Yeah. But it also is not like so goofy that it doesn't feel like there is some like world building and like letting the artist do some like stuff that's really as detailed, if not more detailed, than almost any regular Conan story.
It's not goofy. It's sort of knowingly, in the same way like Savage Sword of Conan and the Savage Avengers stuff is like, it's a little goofy because they're playing with the notion of
a little
of
knowingly
Conan.
Over the top.
The talking axe is kind of goofy, but it serves its purpose.
But it's no, over the top is what I'd say. Instead, it's deliberately like action-y Conan stuff.
Right. Also written with an R rating.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
Scott Snyder has a quote on the cover that says, "What you want and way more." So
it's actually really fun.
Way more.
I was intrigued, but not so sure it was going to hook me. But I actually really thought this was a good first.
So to remind people, the book is Barbaric.
Barbaric. There's a Black Cat annual. The annuals they're doing right now are all tied into these Infinite Destinies, which that's the backup story. This one is a one-shot story. It's by Jed McKay, the guy who's the current Black Cat writer. In which Black Cat winds up in South Korea working for a Korean super spy named the White Fox and her super team. It is full of super fun things and...
including, like, some original Korean superheroes.
A fully formed new Korean super team that I kind of want to see more of. But it's basically another heist adventure with superhero elements, and it's a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. If you've been reading Black Cat, definitely want to give that one a look. Rob Liefeld... half did The Shield with Archie before leaving in a huff.
It's the Mighty Crusaders, technically.
Yes. All the art and story was done, so they brought in David Gallagher, a veteran writer, to script it. And basically, this is a... The Shield is their, like, patriotic hero, and a team is assembled to go and take him on.
I will say, I know there's Liefeld fans out there. If you're a Liefeld fan, this is him kind of getting to do the big superhero stuff he likes to do.
Yep, for sure. And then there's a new one-shot from IDW called Godzilla Rivals, which finds Godzilla and battling...
It's the smog
Cordura.
Monster.
Oh, that's who that is.
I think, confirm that this is a quarterly series, because there's a next issue thing in the end, even though it's billed as a one-shot.
Yeah.
So I think, basically every few months we're gonna get a new one of these Godzilla one-shots, which I think is kind of cool for the G fans out there.
I did allude, there are some jumping-on points this week. Crossover number 7 is a weird standalone issue. It is written by Chip Zdarsky with art by Phil Hester. And it is about what happened to the real-life Chip Zdarsky in this crazy crossover world where comic writers are being hunted down.
Oh, that's weird.
So it is semi-autobiographical. And there's actually some stuff in here where Chip Zdarsky reveals his real name, if you didn't know. Zdarsky's a pen name.
I knew it was a pen name, but I didn't know that he would reveal his real name.
He reveals his real name in here. There's a little bit of... autobiographical stuff in there.
Okay.
Oh, interesting.
It's not just goofy. It is also a little bit serious and was really fun. That Texas Blood, the sort of crime book from Jacob Phillips, Sean Phillips' son, and Chris Condon, gets a second story arc starting this week. Department of Truth starts a new story arc where they're going after Bigfoot and other cryptids.
Hmm.
Daredevil starts a new story arc.
It's a beautiful cover on Daredevil.
And then there's new issues of Shang-Chi, Beta Ray Bill, and the Marvels. I read all that. Then there are some graphic novels.
We have to mention this one real quick. This is like DC's, for that very like sort of YA line that we were talking about, although this might be the one that's skews a little younger.
Yeah.
But it is a young, kid-friendly version of John Constantine.
Yep.
A.K.A. the title of this is The Mystery of the Meanest Teacher, a Johnny Constantine graphic novel.
It's like basically doing him as like a Nancy Drew type.
Doesn't he have a lollipop instead
of a... He has a lollipop instead of a cigarette. He hangs out with his new friend Anna, a.k.a. Zatanna. I saw the demon in there. Like, it's kind of a lighthearted version of him where he's like a ne'er-do-well in school. But not like a sleazeball.
Really nice cartooning.
Like the art is actually very nice.
So this is written by Ryan North, who did, among other things, Dinosaur Comics and The Squirrel Girl. Originally, yeah. And art is by Derek Charm, who did the Jughead book with Zdarsky, and also is doing the Star Wars Adventures book.
I noticed on the first page when they're introducing him, the narration starts like, in which our hero, and then hero is crossed out, and they're like, in which our champion is crossed out, and then they're like, in which our protagonist is men. And then there's a funny bit later on where they're introducing another character, and in the next chapter it begins saying, it's like chapter two, in which our other protagonist is met, because we have two of them. So already this book is giving you value. There's some pretty clever writing like that in there.
One of the trades I think that we were all pretty happy to see, it's a big trade from IDW called Dungeons & Dragons Fells 5. And this was when the 4th edition D&D came out.
Yeah.
IDW did a new D&D book.
And we were pushing it pretty hard at the time.
Yeah, we championed this a lot.
This is it's a set of new adventurers, no tie-ins to the existing characters like Minsk and Boo and all that stuff.
Right, but they were bringing in the what were at the time of the 4th edition were kind of novelty new races in there.
Yeah, there's a tiefling. There's not a dragonborn in the main group though.
A tiefling, a dragonborn does show up at some point. I'm sure of it. Yeah,
but the tiefling is one of the main ones.
Yep.
But the most notable thing is, it is written by John Rogers, who you might know from
Leverage,
The Librarians.
Yep.
And it is basically a sort of heisty D&D book.
Yeah. He's a guy who loves RPGs. In fact,
he knows his games.
He wrote like RPG for Leverage.
Yep.
It's played straight, but there's a lot of sort of snark to it.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good balance. They also do kind of a neat thing. Randy, am I correct that they included the adventures in this?
Yes, the adventures and the stats of the characters on the back.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's like basically an adventure based on the ones that happen in some of these issues is included with them. That's very cool.
I will say for me personally, it's my favorite D&D book.
Me too. But nothing's even close.
I will have to revisit. It's possible.
Art is by Andrew DeVito, so it's really.
Although honestly, I think in my head, I will always go back to the DC Advanced Dungeons and Dragons comic.
This stuff's good. It was written by Jeff Grubb, who's a D&D designer, but I think John Rogers is actually better.
This is a great collection, and it has all three in one. I do like the hardcovers that were the same size as the D&D books. Those are fantastic.
Oh, and also just sort of note on the. Richness level. The cover was by Wayne Reynolds, who was doing all of the art, and is like one of the big standout modern fantasy artists. He's done both Pathfinder and D&D.
It's super iconic.
Nick, X Factor wraps up the Hellfire Gala this week.
Yeah, I haven't read it, but I was curious to see what, because this is also the final issue of X Factor.
Right.
And it does end with a bang. Like, there is a big thing, and it leads right into the trial of Magneto.
Okay, and then also Infinite Frontier Secret Files, looks like.
Yep, that as well, which is a bunch of, like,
little... It's not actual, like, it's not like the who's who stuff. But no. These are stories of the characters involved.
Yeah, it starts out with, like, a Mr. Bones and a Calvin Ellis story. There's a Jade and Obsidian story. Roy and Ollie story. So it kind of jumps around, utilizing characters with Psycho Pirate story, because he's definitely fitting in. A Captain Boomerang, John Jones. So this is kind of focusing on some of the characters that are more important to the Infinite Frontier story.
And then, is this the final issue of Cable as well?
I'm not sure if it's the final issue, because are they renumbering it?
Cable Reloaded.
Oh, right. It might be, actually. They're all kind of... Some of these are winding down. It says next is Cable Forever, which I don't know if that's what that...
So it's going to be nipples on his armor?
No, I just think it just means Old Man Cable is back and is going to kick the kid's butt.
What are you talking about?
Batman Forever.
Yes, he was making a Batman Forever joke. Okay. I just decided to skip past that. Also, another trade, the Patton Oswalt...
Head Games, the Patton Oswalt and Jordan Bloom, who did the TV show.
Yep.
If you like the TV show, you will like this comic. And then The King in Black gets collected as a trade this week.
Right, that is the Symbiotes Invade Earth.
Yeah, basically the end of Donny Cates' Venom run.
Does that have actually the last issue of Venom?
It does not, which is too bad.
It's just the King in Black core story.
It's just the main King in Black, yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. They're going to put that in the regular Venom issue.
Yeah, it does. It makes sense. All right, well, that's it for comics. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about the Fast Saga. I'm going to begin this segment with a spoiler warning. We are going to spoil large segments of F9 The Fast Saga. If you have not seen it, you should go watch the previous 8 movies, and then Hobbs and Shaw, and then see F9 The Fast Saga.
And if you're only going to watch one because you think we're insane, go ahead and watch Fast 5. It's
correct.
The best.
That is correct.
And if it's gonna anything's going to maybe sell you on it, it's probably that one.
That's true.
But if you still don't believe, then we just can't talk to you.
No, no.
Because these movies are knowingly silly and very addictive.
So this was... we saw Hobbs and Shaw, but this was my first official Fast and Furious outing with you guys.
Yeah.
You guys started with 5 and began seeing all of them.
Yeah, I dragged...
Well, you had already seen them, I'm sure, right?
I'd seen 1 through 4. Well, actually, I take that back. I think I saw 1 through 3 and then I saw 4 at home because I didn't... I wasn't 100%.
Okay, but you've actually been seeing them at the theater, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, then you'd seen them. So it was the first one for me.
Yeah, I dragged you to Fast 5, and I said, you will enjoy it, and you did.
And I tried, and I couldn't get into it, and I finally got back when 8 came out. Y'all's enthusiasm won me over, and I watched it all, and I fell in love with it.
Now, we semi-often have it on in the background at the store, even though it is kind of crass and cheesy.
Yep.
It is, by and large, a kind of wholesome crass and cheesy.
Well, it's knowing at this point. Like, when we went and saw it, the crowd that we had to watch with was
the perfect
great.
Crowd, yeah.
They were cracking up. Like, we were all laughing. Like, this was
they
like...
They knew how silly it was, and the movie knew how silly it was.
And we're enjoying it. It's not like we're laughing at, oh, this is such a stupid movie, I can't believe they made it. It's like, oh, no, this is gloriously stupid. They knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
Let me give you a quick example of the glorious stupidity of it. I don't remember which one this is in. Y'all remind me. I want to say it's 6 or 7. But what's the one where The Rock has the cast?
That is 7.
7, okay. The Rock, who has become their sort of like military ally to these kind of heisty street racers, gets his arm broken early on, and so he spends a chunk of the movie with the cast on. But then when things go really bad at the end and they all got to rally to fight the big bad guys, it's like he knows his time to leave the hospital, and he stands up and he like flexes his arm and explodes the cast off his arm.
Yep.
And he's ready to fight again.
These movies have a very RPG element, very comic book like.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm weirded out because I do listen to another podcast about movies, and one of the guys on there was so down on this movie, and he loves comics. And I'm like, how can you not see the correlation? Because
the thing is, Nick, there are people who love wrestling in comics, and they're like, how do you not love wrestling if you love comics? And I do not love wrestling, and I love comics. So everybody likes different things.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I did like wrestling for a time back in the 80s. Yeah.
But they, specifically follow so many tropes in this, whether it's, like, you know, last-minute escapes, of course.
Resurrections.
But resurrections and rehabilitations of villains.
And retcons.
And retcons. There's actually a super fun one that sort of, in some ways, paved the way for this movie, where a character, Han, one in the group, seemingly got killed.
Yep.
And then they revealed that timeline wise that actually slotted in before what which one? So Tokyo Drift?
It was Tokyo Drift, which was 3.
The third.
And then they revealed that it happens after 6.
Right, that Tokyo Drift, although it was a third movie, would basically be like 6.5 if you want to think about it that way. And like it didn't do anything to hurt any of the movies, and it only kind of made it more silly and sort of fun.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of those kind of things that happen. You get to see like old characters, almost like guest stars show up.
There's the SHIELD organization run by
Kurt Russell. Mr. Nobody. Yeah,
right.
Yep.
And whenever those like the Brazilian brothers show up, it always cracks me up. They're the two kind of bickering brothers that are kind of the allies.
So 5 and 6, 5 was sort of a heisty thing. They all got together and they had to do a heist. 6. They got involved with The Rock on his side because they had to get Letty out of this evil heist. It was they were called in.
The Rock comes to Vin Diesel and says that Letty is still alive.
It was basically if 5 is Ocean's 11 but with cars, 6 is to catch a thief but with cars.
Yes,
and 7 was also more. They at this point they were sort of an operative team. And they get called in.
Can I call the 8 Hunt for Red October, but with cars?
No, the 8 is Dark Phoenix, but with cars.
But there is a submarine, so it kind of
works.
That's
what I was talking about.
But yes. But yeah, they sort of like they slowly went from being this heisty group to like a super spy organization.
Yes, it's literally like imagine SHIELD coming to the best street racers and saying, "We've got a mission that our guys can't handle."
Yeah, it's like Armageddon, honestly.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, same kind of idea.
So now that they're involved with this world class evil hacker Cypher, played with
Charlize Theron,
scenery chewing glee by Charlize Theron.
There's a Yoda joke that is very funny.
Yeah, yeah. So she last movie she got away. This starts with her being captured by Mr. Nobody, but his plane has gone down. So he calls for help, not from this mysterious secret organization, but Dom and his friends.
Exactly. Yeah. The people he can really trust.
Right. The street racers that are like family to each other.
Yes. So they have to go to South America and find the downed plane where they discover the MacGuffin of the movie, which is a two-piece weird bit of technology, super
that
spy technology.
That basically hacks all technology.
It'll hack all the weapons in the world.
Yes, and they've already done at least one or two movies with things that'll hack things.
Yeah, yeah.
But this one is like, it's very much in the style of almost of the old G.I. Joe cartoon, where like a device would get broken into pieces and scattered around the world, and they would have to break up into smaller teams to go in search of them.
I will say the MacGuffin doesn't really matter.
But chasing them. Sure.
That is the very definition of a MacGuffin, actually.
Yeah.
Chasing them is Dom's brother.
Oh, yeah, this one does retcon in the fact that Dom had a brother.
Jacob.
And we also get a lot of flashbacks to Dom as a young version of himself with his father racing and how his father died.
He was kind
of
like, I don't know what you'd even call it, but he was like a spotter on the track and kind of did like the pit crew stuff.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
And but he would be like on the mic talking to his dad during the races saying, hey, this guy's going to cut you off on this corner or he's coming up on you or whatever.
I think I read that the person who played the sort of, there's two people who played young Dom. And Yeah, there were two different ones.
Oh, okay.
And the youngest one is actually Vin Diesel's son.
Oh, okay.
Which I thought was kind of interesting.
Okay. I actually half wondered, like, I was trying to figure out if they were, like, dubbing in a variant of his voice in there.
Yeah, because it did sound like him.
He did sound like him.
I think it's actually his son.
That makes sense. Randy, I know you felt that there were a few too many flashbacks.
I did.
The flashbacks were some of my favorite parts.
Oh. Yeah.
I liked seeing these people that were very clearly, like, they make sure everybody has some iconography, like Dom always wears his crucifix.
Yep.
They are...
Well, in the first Fast and Furious, we know that he went to jail or for prison for beating somebody with a wrench. Now we know who that person was and why.
Oh, yeah.
So there's continuity here.
Yes, there is.
Yep.
Jacob, by the way, I don't know if you've said, is played by John Cena.
Yes.
Right. Not young him, but older him.
Doing his best impersonation of Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
So you get these two hulking, angry at each other brothers who've never reconciled, clearly had issues of approval with their dad and like favoritism and stuff like that. And so although John Cena is trying to kill them throughout and does some very bad things, on some level you're like, gosh, I hope the brothers can just be friends again.
Yeah, well, usually the Fast and the Furious, with the exception of Cypher, who killed Elena and probably is never going to get redeemed.
Right.
Although they probably wind up having to work with her on something in Suicide Squad style fashion. But every one of them, even the guy who killed Han, became an ally at some point.
Yep. And that is but anyway, there's a plot point that I guess I won't reveal any specifics, and they actually didn't do quite as good a job as I would have wanted on it.
Yeah, yeah.
But they did reveal how he had survived it.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, because I think that the way it was filmed was a little bit nebulous enough, I think they could have done it better than they did and explained things a little bit better.
I agree.
But I was happy to see that they paid attention to the fans. They brought him back. They also brought back people from the movie that he kicked off in, that is to say, Tokyo Drift.
Yep.
And they brought back his like support crew.
Yeah.
No, Han was part of the support crew.
Yeah.
Right. The Texan dude was the lead.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
He had basically been sent to Tokyo as kind of punishment. For screwing up so many times that he was in trouble with the law. And his father was living in Tokyo.
That guy is like he has a big crazy accent.
Yep, but now they're a rocket scientist and they build a space car.
Yes, which is to say they're like goofing around like at the jet propulsion laboratory stuff, doing stuff like strapping rocket engines onto cars. and for experiments and stuff like that. They're like a bunch of mad scientist types.
Yeah.
And you're like, I wonder if this will show up in the rest of the movie. And indeed, in case you thought that the craziest thing they would be doing is like driving up collapsing rope bridges and over across the jungle in South America, or literally kind of like latching like a vine onto their car to swing with the car.
Or Tarzan style.
Tarzan style.
Or catching humans with their cars.
Catching humans with their cars. Right. If you thought that was a little silly, or maybe a little bit much, then you are not ready for a car in space. Because that's what happens. That's what happens. It's on, like, they kind of do their best to, like, say, like, you know, strapped to these, like, big booster rockets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the, what, Pontiac Fiero?
It is a Pontiac Fiero.
Yeah.
They launch into space.
They launch it into space. It's got to go stop. Because at the end, just like Return of the Jedi or something, you have a multi-tiered battle thing where there's stuff going on in the streets below. There's stuff going on in space, and there's probably a fist fight happening somewhere.
Yeah. Is Helen Mirren, is she Dame Helen Mirren? Is she her official title?
I think she is.
So
Dame Helen Mirren is in this, heisting a necklace and then driving a car around.
Delightful. She puts on a Cockney accent, and she's the mother of reformed villain at this point, Jason Statham.
Yep.
Once he was one of the big bads of the series, but now he helps him out.
Yep.
I thought that Vin Diesel is friends with two dames, because he...
Dame Judi Dench.
For Riddick.
The set of Riddick.
What a world we live in.
He
what
must
a time
be, like,
to be alive.
I mean, I assume he's just, like, very personable and nice.
I think he must be.
At this point, I feel like if you're gonna be friends with Helen Mirren and
trying to pitch D&D to
Dame Judi Dench.
Judi Dench, and he's like, you're already a great actress. Just imagine what you could be with your own character you create. He's like, you could be an elf or a dwarf, and her eyes are just like widening. She's like, okay,
let me tell you about my. Isn't he like an elf? Isn't that his, like, main character?
Well, he has some witch hunter character,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but, like, yeah, when he did, like, an intro to one of the D&D hardcovers years ago, he talked as only a real D&D player can about his tragic warrior wandering the wastelands and stuff like that. It's hysterical.
There's a reason
why. But I love his sincerity. He's 100%
sincere. There's a reason
sincere.
Why the Fast and Furious feels like an RPG at times.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So his mere presence converts it over. It is, by the way, it is clearly a permissive DM RPG, or game master, rather.
Oh, is there part of the one rope bridge left? Can I grab it with my car and swing across?
Yes.
I guess make a roll.
Damn right you can. And little does he know that all the dice are fixed.
I will say, I did love Tyrese Gibbs and
Roman has this whole running thing about maybe we're invincible. We can't ever get killed.
It gets meta as he realizes they've been on all these capers and they've never. He's like, I don't have a scratch on me. It's actually like it clearly runs the risk of being too meta, but I really enjoyed it.
I did too.
Also, if you're a big fan of magnets, you're gonna love this movie.
Yeah, a lot of magnets in this. Yeah.
If you are a juggalo, though, put some distance between yourself and this movie. It's just going to confuse you. Yeah, they have crazy magnets that they use. They wield as sort of weapons. As they drive around and they activate the electromagnet in their car, they drag other stuff behind them, pull things out windows to hit other cars.
It's something I don't know if I've ever seen in another action movie.
No, it's a weird one.
And it may be because that you would say, like, well, wouldn't you activate it once and it would just collapse the very car you're in around it?
No, Dave, that's not how it works.
Well, you know, if
these are
all
future
they said,
tech magnets.
I don't know if they ever said, but like, you know, the pulse starts, you know, 10 feet out from it or something like that. I don't know. It could.
Sure.
You can tell me that and I will just nod and say, sure, that's how electromagnets work.
Yeah, why not? We're firing a car into space. How much? This all makes sense.
I just hope that Justin Lin, who directed this and directed various episodes of the Fast franchise, continues out and just finishes out the series.
Yeah.
He has the handle on it that I want.
Yep. I will say it was like there's a few points where it is a little beyond what I would have liked for the series to be. I would rein in the vine swinging, and I think I would have done. I don't mind them going into space, but I thought it was almost a little too silly how they did it.
I am on board for. I love Hobbs and Shaw. I'm on board for as silly as they want to get.
Once you've got Idris Elba as cybernetic Black Superman.
Yep.
Self-described Black Superman, by the way. I'm not just being weird.
He calls himself that.
Yes. And you know, I thought that movie was like occasionally a little more than I wanted. I want the balance. My favorite balance is probably like the fifth and sixth movies or whatever. But like even like the ridiculousness of the Cuban Mile race, still I believe their best opening. But by the way, I did like this opening, and I actually really liked all the flashback scenes.
You should watch the first four and see if it's still your favorite opening.
There's some good ones. I actually think, David, you might like four better than some of the other ones, because it's the fourth a little more grounded in some ways.
The fourth
it's
opening is really good, actually.
Yeah. Yeah,
But the thing is, like, with this, you know, the tagline, because they hit it so often, it's comedic, is about how they're, like, family in this, and they're always, like, it just kind of comes back to that again and again and again. Even in a single movie, they'll hit you over the head with it. But it does kind of feel like going back, to, at the very least, to see friends at this point. Yeah. Like, these are all sort of beloved characters. Everybody is kind of, even the a-holes are kind of genial a-holes, and you're kind of like to hang out with them.
Because we've had 20 years of Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah, it's crazy.
By the way, this is tagged F9 The Fast Saga.
Uh-huh.
Which everyone else you can read is Fine The Fast Saga. Which I think might have been what the pitch was. Like, hey, we're going to do another movie? Fine The Fast Saga.
but yes, another fun outing, recommended series. They should do a good video game based on these.
They should.
With just like the craziest of car physics where you can like do just wild tricks and stuff.
I'd say they should do a board game, but apparently there is a co-op board game of Fast and Furious.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I was going to say there should be an RPG.
Yes. I don't know about that.
Interesting. All right.
So, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk... Nick and I are going to talk about Evil, which Dave has not watched yet.
Yes, but a series that I, even though I will not be here for it, I strongly endorse because the first season was so good.
Yeah.
All right, Dave has departed, and now Nick and I are going to talk about Evil Season 2, which is two episodes in.
Yep.
I know we talked about Season 1 way back when.
But I don't know if people know about this.
I don't know if they do either.
It's a very interesting show. It started out on CBS. Now it has moved to the Paramount Plus.
It's on Paramount Plus, which changed up the tone a little bit.
Yeah, they kind of freed it up a little bit. But it's from the creators of The Good Wife and
Robert
and
Michelle King, who did The Good Wife and Good Fight. And it stars Mike Coulter from a.k.a. Luke Cage.
Yes.
And Asif Manvi.
Yes,
I forget
love
the name of the lead female character.
Right.
And she's great.
And it focuses sort of on this team of... One's a priest in training.
An atheist tech guy.
An atheist tech guy.
And a psychologist.
Yes.
Like a criminal psychologist.
And they are sort of... They're working for the Roman Catholic Church, sort of debunking supernatural things.
Yep. Or sometimes discovering supernatural things.
Or sometimes discovering. And it's a little X-Files-y.
It is. But it also... They have a foil in the form of... Is it Leland Townsend?
Yes, Leland Townsend.
Played by Michael...
Emerson.
Michael Emerson.
Ben from Lost.
Yes. And he plays the most sadistic little shit.
He does. The interesting thing about this show is that you never know if the supernatural is like... Or at least I'm still questioning whether or not some of it is real and some of it is fake.
Definitely some of it is real.
Yeah.
But it definitely seems. They do some stuff where people get drugged or have, like, psychological issues, and so you never know what's real and what isn't.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Coulter does, like, acid and various forms of trying to reach God.
Yeah. There's someone here who's hallucinating a, like, scary-ass angel.
Yep.
And then...
It was interesting. It was like the Michael, which I was like, from The Good Place?
Yeah, definitely not Michael
no.
from The Good Place. But their bishop who's running there is Peter Scolari from Bosom Buddies. And he's
I
great.
Know.
But in the tail end of season one, what's her name? What's the lead character's name? Kristen.
Kristen, yes.
Kristen, the psychologist. Murdered a serial killer who was threatening her family.
Correct. A serial killer that was very nasty.
And who was definitely going to kill her family. Like, it was essentially self-defense. She basically murdered with a pickaxe and got away with it. And now she's, like, telling her psychologist, played by Kurt Fuller, another great actor.
Yep.
She tells him all about it. But does Asif Manvi's character, Ben, also does he also
he
know?
Suspects because
he suspects.
He saw her with blood on her shoes or something.
Yeah.
And how kind of off-put she was when talking with, like, a police officer about who was trying to get her to consult on the case a little bit.
Right. He suspects that she did it.
But Ben, or Asif Manvi's character, is now kind of dealing with his own sort of, like, night terrors. And
which was one of the big things for Kristen this season. And that's interesting, because he's, like, he's the atheist. He doesn't believe any of this.
But he had some great stuff in the first season, dealing with sort of paranormal investigators that he was kind of called in to work with.
Yeah.
And this show is just, it's interesting. It's an interesting look at these ideas that I haven't seen before. It's just really well executed.
And also, I really, Leyland, to get at Kristen, started dating her sort of mess of a mom.
Yeah.
Christine Lottie.
Yep.
And that's
she going... She was on 30-something, right? And a bunch
think,
of like
I think
the...
so. I don't know her from anywhere, but she, they start going in an interesting direction with that relationship this season. And also, Leyland is basically, he's like tormenting them. He basically came to them and is like, I want to be exercised. And they all know he's full of shit, but they have to keep going through the motions because their bishop is like, no, we need to do this.
God grants, you know, forgiveness and all this other stuff. And
so, like, them trying to outmaneuver each other is really interesting.
And sort of seeing this kind of descent from Kristen from being in a place... now where she's killed somebody and having to deal with that and like a crucifix actually burns her. What does that mean?
Yeah, right.
And there's kind of like they have a science is like, oh, it's cobalt. It was heated. It's right. obviously going to leave a mark. Or is it something else?
Right. X-Files is a good touchstone for this. There is a little bit of that vagary of is this real, is it not? Although they handle their arcs and their mythology a little bit stronger, a little bit better.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think overarching the story is definitely better than the X-Files. And I'm so glad that it's back.
It's really good, and it's the transition over to Paramount Plus has been a good thing, I think.
Yeah, now they swear.
They swear now. Yep.
they sound like real humans.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, definitely worth a look. I think we would both definitely recommend it. All right, that'll do it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.